Welcome to The Range Brief with Blackhorn. We are your hosts, Mark Gore and Jared Raymond. Mark, what are we talking about today?
Today we are talking about long-range shooting. And we're fortunate to have Jared here, actually is an expert on this topic. So Jared, tell us a little bit about your experience.
Yeah, Mark. So I graduated the U.S. Army Sniper School at Fort Benning, Georgia in 2013. And ever since then, up to about a year ago, I've been pretty active in the community. I've also been very fortunate to teach a lot of people how to shoot long range.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you're a pretty good shot, probably the best shot around the shop in this area, at least.
Now that you said it, somebody's going to come for the crown, man.
Yeah, not with a shotgun, though, just in case anyone's wondering.
It's got to have sights.
Yeah. So yeah, long range shooting, something a lot of people are interested in. It's an exciting topic that we see people come in the store every day asking about how to get into it, but it takes some experience and tools to do so. What do you see people, drawing people in? What's exciting about it?
I think it's the most exciting because it's also probably the most difficult discipline, one, to gain the knowledge, and two, the equipment is kind of severe. Yeah. But who doesn't want to shoot like Tom Berenger or Bob Lee Swagger?
Okay. All right. Pulling out some old people that I've never heard of.
Wow.
But why don't you go with like Enemy at the Gates? That's like, I don't know, it's a common one. One of the best sniper movies of all time.
I disagree. Okay. Fundamentally.
All right. Whatever. Anyway, this comes from a guy that his favorite book is Unintended Consequences.
This is true.
Wow. So yeah, I don't take any flack. Anyway, yeah, I don't know who those dudes are, but I feel like it is pretty cool to be able to go out there, reach out and touch someone or something at 1,000 yards.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the challenge and achievement of hitting targets and a lot of people say 1,000 yards, but for a lot of people, 400 yards or 600 yards, that's long range shooting. Realistically, 1,000 yards, 1,200 yards, out to 2,000 yards, you can do that with equipment.
Yeah.
And then the final piece of that of like, what is the draw to long range is understanding the science of shooting, knowing what a bullet does at distance. I think a lot of people, that draws them in.
Yeah.
Just being an expert in all craft of shooting. I think that's important to a lot of people.
Yeah. And it seems like a decent amount of math, which I guess we'll kind of get into, but not really.
There's some math sometimes. Okay. Yeah.
All right, cool. So yeah, Ohio's not a haven for long range shooting, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So there's a couple places that you can shoot. So Rainers and Blue Rock, Ohio, they have 1,000 yard range. And then Thunder Valley Precision, they have a 1650, so a mile. And both of those are very great facilities. So yeah, Highly recommend. Also Camp Perry, just off the coast of Lake Erie. You can also do some shooting there. You just got to get some permission and go through some steps. But a lot of people are familiar with that.
Yeah. And then I feel like on the shorter side, there's a lot of clubs, like hunt clubs. A lot of times they call them game clubs that have, at least 100, sometimes 300 yard ranges that you can shoot at too. It, keep you a little bit more local and give you some ability to try out some of the skills here.
For sure. And, if you got a buddy with a couple hundred acres,
yeah,
he can also hook you up.
Yeah. Yep. That's a little bit harder connection to make, but a lot of people have that. So, if you're out there shooting on the range, what is it that you are shooting at? Are you shooting at paper like you would on an indoor, like pistol range?
Absolutely. I mean, if you can shoot at paper targets, the bummer of paper targets is it's really hard to get your feedback. Because after you get past 200 yards, you're going to need pretty awesome glass to see bullet holes in paper. Ooh. So all of these ranges are going to be steel targets, and you're going to see the impact, and then you're going to hear the impact.
In that order.
Yes, every time, always.
Oh, that's wild. Okay. Very neat. And then I guess while we're talking about ranges and distances, the rimfire side of things is often at shorter distances.
Yeah. So those guys, and this is not my discipline, so I might speak out of turn here, but those are typically within 200 yards. I think the furthest they shoot out is 400, like 300 is a pretty far shot just because the elements really start to affect 22.
Yeah, lightweight bullet.
Yeah, lightweight bullet, not going very fast. But those PRS dudes, what they do is they buy that, they learn a lot of the skills they need, and then they go shoot PRS. And they come out of the gate, maybe with a new gun, and they they do really well typically because they learn all those skills, those soft skills before they get to a gun that costs, you know, $2 to $6 a bullet.
Sure. Sure. So we've talked a little bit about how there's a little bit of a barrier in equipment. What is it that you need to get going if you want to get started?
So what you really need, now there's some caveats to this, but what you have to start out is a gun that can shoot at least a 2-inch group at 100 yards. That will give you a 20-inch cone of deviation or group at 1,000 yards before you take into account any atmospherics. Now, if you have a gun that can shoot a tighter group at 100, like, I don't know, a surgeon, and it can shoot a quarter MOA, that is going to make your life a lot easier when accounting for variables at distance.
And for the layman, MOA is, you know, one MOA would be 1 inch at 100 yards.
Yes. For, it's not quite exactly 1 inch. I think it's like 1.3 something. But yes, for all intents and purposes, for anybody who's just doing grouping, a 1 inch group is if you can put all your bullets within a 1 inch square at 100 yards.
Okay. Is it, so is that meters then? Is that the variance?
Yards is, when you're looking at rifles, everything is going to, if it has like a sub MOA guarantee, that's what they're going off of, what it can group at distance. Now, MOA and mils, we'll talk about that a little bit later, but actually different measurements. I mean,
okay,
think about using a yardstick versus a meter stick.
Sure. Okay. Very good. So you've got a gun that can group well.
Yep. Yep. The next thing is you're going to need an optic that is capable of accurate and consistent adjustments. The reason this is so important is because if you do everything the same and make the same adjustment on your gun and it shoots in a different place, you're going to have a terrible experience.
Yeah.
Now, there's lots of things to look for in a scope, things that I prefer and things that, you know, a tactical shooter versus a precision rifle shooter, they're going to have, you know, different things that they want. But for all intents and purposes, you just need good glass. And this is really where I would, if you're going to get started in this, you're better off using an older gun. Let's say you got a, you know, a 30-06 Remington 700.
Yeah,
in a wood stock that it doesn't look cool, but man, that gun is capable of far more than people get it credit for. I mean, the gun hasn't changed that much in the last 100 years.
Yeah.
But optics have made leaps and bounds. So you're much better off spending that money on glass and what we are going to call the rifle system. So just having a gun and a good scope, that's some of it, right? But also you need ammo that your gun shoots well.
Yeah.
I know like a lot of my ARs, some of them shoot 55 grain really well. Some of them don't shoot 55 grain in a 4-inch circle or a 4-inch square.
That's so weird.
Yeah. But you're going to see that even across brands. So just because you have a 55 grain bullet from Hornady doesn't mean it's going to shoot as well, or if not better, than a bullet from Sierra. And typically when you're looking at match ammunition, they're far more exacting in the standards, and then the bullets are heavier, and a heavier bullet is a longer bullet. And that's really what you're looking for. You want it to have, long bullets have high BCs cut the wind better.
And so the match ammo is typically more expensive. You know, we see that on the shelves. That's just better, like quality control, more consistent measurements of powder. Is it like that kind of thing?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Accuracy of powder charge, accuracy of case length, accuracy of overall length, and then bullet seating depth. There's a lot that goes into match ammo, and that's why it costs money. Usually double the price of ball ammo, if not more. Okay. But there's a reason. So, you know, when we talk about that system, having a free-floated barrel so that you can push it into a barricade or really load into your bipod, that's going to be important, because if you push on the gun and it moves the barrel, that's going to really suck at 400, 500, 800 yards.
Yeah.
A bipod, shooting from the prone, is always what I recommend. Unless you have a medical condition or it's just really uncomfortable for you to shoot from the ground, then shoot from a bench. But no matter what, you're going to need a way to support that gun. A match trigger. And then we kind of talked about it, but if you have a really good scope and a really good gun and you put it in a crappy mount,
yeah,
you might as well have not spent any of that money, because the system's going to fail you.
Like that $20 Weaver Willys.
That's not great.
Yep. I feel like we have seen that plenty. And not only that, but it needs to be mounted well and consistently. And we see that all the time, you know, someone all the time, multiple times a month, someone comes in with a gun and they've got a nice, beautiful gun. They've got a good optic for it. And they even have like a nice set of rings or a mount for it, but they didn't Loctite it so the screws are coming out, or they under torqued or over torqued the scope mounts, or the scope's canted.
Yeah, not that's level. Bad. You get scope has got to be level. That is step one.
And mounting a scope sounds easy, and once you get used to it, it's not terrible. But just like leveling the reticle, yeah, that takes some tools or thought process. You can't just eyeball it, really.
Yeah, absolutely. If you eyeball it, you are going to have a tough time trying to shoot at distance, because you're relying on that scope to tell you drop. And if it's not telling you in the right direction, your adjustments just aren't correct. And then some other things you can do to help, like putting a suppressor on the gun. Suppressors, in every case I've ever seen, positively affect accuracy. You're adding more weight to that system, and you're usually making you're increasing the enjoyment factor pretty significantly shooting suppressed, especially long range.
And it typically adds like 5 feet per second or something.
Yeah, it'll either stabilize, you know, your loads. So we'll get into this a little bit later on stuff that you kind of want to do this. But yeah, a suppressor has many benefits in precision shooting, and only like one downside.
Absolutely. What's the downside?
It would be mirage.
Oh.
Because you're putting what effectively a muffler on the front of your gun.
Yeah.
No matter what you do shooting, the barrel's going to heat up and you're going to get mirage through the scope, but suppressors really hold that heat and it's really easy to see and it distorts the image.
And mirage your at home listener, he's not talking about when you're out in the desert and you see this big, beautiful oasis. He's talking about,
it's the same thing.
Oh, sure it is. Is it really?
It's the same phenomenon.
Well, anyway, I'm thinking about the wavy air, you know,
that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, instead of seeing, you know, water and beautiful women, it's
wavy air.
It's wavy air. It's just, I can't see my target.
Very good. I guess that can be solved with a suppressor cover, right?
Yep. Yep. A suppressor cover will delay the problem, but eventually that thing is going to meet the same temperature.
Sure.
But it'll give you typically double the time. So if you're AR, you get really bad mirage in 10 rounds, you would get it in 20 rounds.
Okay. Yeah. Understood. And if you want more info on suppressors, we actually have a episode on suppressors, a few back here. So something for you to listen into.
Yeah. And then the next thing is secret sauce. And this is the sand sock, the rear bag, the game changer bag, basically a positional bag. And it's nothing more than
cornhole.
Bean bags.
Cornhole bag.
Yeah. It's a cornhole bag, essentially. There's some features in there that you can spend more money on, but at the end of the day, that's what you need.
Yep. Make it out of a bag and some rice.
Yep. You need to take your hands off the gun and let the sandbag actually do your positioning. And the only thing that's touching the gun is your shoulder and your finger pulling that trigger. Well, I guess your hand, but.
Yeah, it's surprisingly cool. I feel like you can spend a lot of money on accessories and things, but I've been out long range shooting once in this type of environment. And, you know, essentially you're placing that bag under the gun and you're squeezing it to like raise the gun or unsqueezing it to let it lower and like reposition. So it's pretty neat the way that you guys do that kind of thing to make it much more consistent and thorough.
Taking the human side out of it.
Exactly.
Yep. Well, okay. And then there's some nice to have things and things that will actually save you money. And the first thing that I would buy, the first two things I would buy before I spend a whole lot of money on a gun is I would buy a ballistic computer. Now, whether that be a Kestrel, which is kind of the gold standard in the industry, every military unit now is using a ballistic Kestrel. But on the civilian side, the Hornady app, Strelick, which you can just download on your phone, both of those. And I think the premium version is like less than $10. All of those are better solutions than a traditional dope book.
Are those all the same thing? Like you just need one of those, or are you using a Kestrel and an app?
So the benefit of a Kestrel is it's doing a lot of the inputs for you. So you take out your Kestrel, it's telling you your altitude, your temperature, it's giving you a range card based on your conditions. And you have, once you set it up, it's pretty plug and play.
Okay.
Whereas those other apps, you got to type in all that stuff every time you go to the range, or you have to have cell signal. So it generates it for you.
Okay.
So if you want like the ultimate in, you know, durability and consistency, highly recommend a Kestrel. But any of these things will take a lot of the data on previous engagement. And the way that we used to do it in like, oh man, even like the early 2000s, is you would go yard line by yard line at 100-yard berm. So 100 yards, we'd shoot a group at paper. Then we go back to 200 yards. We'd shoot another group at paper, 300, 400, 500. And that's how you would actually learn what your gun is doing at those distances. Now you had, we had kind of cheat sheets, like this is the universal card, but that doesn't mean what your gun does. And that's kind of important in our line of work.
And that's kind of like what's on the back of an ammo box typically, right? You see like 3 inches of drop at 200 yards.
Exactly. But those, you can't trust those because that's out of like the perfect scenario gun.
Yeah.
They got it on a, you know, for 223, they use a 20-inch barrel and they're using it in a viced up setup at, you know, 80 degrees. They're trying to make that number look great.
Okay.
But in real life, so by the time you shot all these yard lines out to the effective range of the gun, you would spend quite a bit of money. It's taxpayer money, but yeah. You know, it was also practice. The downside of that is you also put a lot of rounds on the barrel of the gun. And we'll talk about calibers a little bit later, but if you put 1,000 rounds of 300 Win Mag through your barrel, you're going to cook that barrel. You got about 200 rounds left, and all you did was learn what it shot at. So a ballistic computer and this next thing, a chronograph, that's going to save you hundreds of rounds of data collection. Because what a chronograph does is it measures how quickly your bullets are leaving the barrel and how consistent your bullets are actually leaving the barrel. So with a chronograph, you're going to shoot 5 bullets. It's going to tell you how fast your bullets are going and the average standard deviation. The reason that's important is it's going to tell you if you have good ammo. Because if your standard deviation is really high, like let's say you got a 20 feet per second variance in your match ammo. In a semi-automatic, that's okay. But in a bolt gun, that's a lot. Ideally, with a bolt gun, you want to be in like sub 9. You want to be at like 9.8 as far as standard deviation. That means your bullets are really accurate, or at least really consistent. But with that chronograph, then you're going to plug that information into your Kestrel, and it's going to give you your dope. It's going to tell you where that bullet is doing at, you know, 1,000 yards, and it's going to get you real damn close. And if it doesn't, it's going to get you close enough to spot it, make the correction in the system, and then your dope is perfect.
Okay. So high level, kind of the two routes. If I'm going to go out there, I've got my gun, optic, it's mounted up well, and I want to get started, but I don't have a chronograph or a ballistic stuff. I go out there and I shoot it at multiple different distances and kind of see how that bullet tracks. And it's that the bullet is either going to be dropping or rising. So it's mostly going to be in up and down. Is that right?
Bullets never rise. They only fall.
Only fall. Okay.
So if you start at 100, and that's a way to do it. So let's say Thunder Valley, for instance, they probably have 8 targets out to 1,000. Well, you can, if you have a decent spotter, you can see your adjustments and make those adjustments and have your data for those targets.
Okay.
It's just not universal, right? So you go from Thunder Valley, and then let's say you take your gun to Colorado. Well, the data you gathered in Ohio is useless in Colorado. Your zero won't change, but that bullet is going to react completely different in that environment.
Just different elevation, different?
Different elevation, different temperature.
Or, okay.
That's going to be the two big ones.
Okay, so that's kind of that route. And then if you have a chronograph and a ballistic computer, you go out, you take a few shots through the chronograph, you punch that into the ballistic or the Kestrel, call it. And then that can basically, you can punch in and say, hey, here's the distance I want to shoot at. And they tell you how to adjust your scope.
Exactly. That is exactly it.
And then so on your range trip, asking these questions while they come up, you're shooting how many rounds? 20 rounds, 100 rounds, 500 rounds?
So on like a pretty decent range trip. Now, the way that you shoot precision rifle is not the way you shoot, I don't know, when you go to the indoor range
with your handgun or
an AR. It's cost prohibitive. Typically what I do with match ammunition, if I'm going to spend the money to go to the range and do all that, I usually shoot about 200 rounds.
Okay.
But I would really like my 200 rounds to be hits.
Yeah.
And not, you know, 50% misses while I gather the information I need to make hits. It sounds expensive. You know, a chronograph is $400 to $500, but think about the savings in barrel life and ammunition. And it starts to make a lot of sense, and you can use it on all your stuff. You can use it on all your guns. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So if your barrel life's 2,000 to 5,000 rounds ish, then, you know, 2,000 rounds would be 10 trips. So that's not, I mean, that's attainable in a year. You could burn a barrel.
Absolutely. If you're shooting anything getting close to 3,000 feet per second, that is hard on barrels, hard on throats, throats of barrels. Rapidly decrease the life of the barrel.
Okay, understood. Anything else on the kind of nice to have side, things that'll help save you money, save you time?
Yeah, we talked a little bit about a suppressor. Makes it easier to shoot, more accurate, less recoil. Covered that. Next would be a spotter. And a spotter is not somebody that has no idea what they're doing. A spotter is somebody who understands the relationship between the gun and the caliber you're shooting and can actually see feedback. So if you're going out with, you know, your buddy, and let's say you got a, $500 scope, it's going to be really difficult to spot with a $500 scope because they either spent that money on the mechanism to make it really accurate and gave it low magnification, or they spent that money on good glass and not as accurate of adjustments. So it's just hard to spot through those. You really want a spotting scope that's like 40 power or more in a great big field of view.
Okay. And so that typically would look like, probably like you see in the movies, you got a guy laying down prone on the gun, and then you have someone next to him with a scope who's just telling the shooter where shots are hitting.
Exactly. Ideally, they'd be right behind you.
Okay.
Because it's a lot easier to get your windage if you're right behind the shooter. Mm-hmm. But traditionally in the military, they do that because you can talk to each other. And now modern shooting, nobody's shooting with a spotter anymore. It's usually shooter, which you can do if you got really nice scopes.
Okay.
Because it's just easier to spot right next to the guy if you both got the same glass.
Makes sense. So we've talked some about bullets and how distance will affect them, windage will affect them. What all will affect that bullet's path? Like, you know, we hear about in a shooter, I think they talk about, you know, shooting like 2 miles or something and the earth is turning and you have to like adjust for the gravitational pull.
Yeah. I've never taken a shot where I had to adjust for the Coriolis effect or the spinning of the earth. That's not a thing.
Well, haven't met Mark Wahlberg.
What really affects a bullet is temperature, altitude, and the biggest factor as far as hitting targets for people is wind, because the computer can take care of temperature and altitude, but wind is, that's the mastery. That's where time on the gun, and you actually learn that.
What about wind coming at you or coming from behind you? I guess I'm thinking left, right, but does that affect you much?
No, that would be a zero factor.
Okay.
Zero value is how the way we would say that. Coming from directly in front of you or directly behind you, no effort.
Okay. Very little surface area, I guess, to push on there.
So small, you can't make the adjustment.
Okay. Well, I guess this segues us into calibers. So what calibers do you often see people shoot longer ranges with? What would you recommend? I guess walk us through the whole spectrum there.
Yeah. So when I talk about determining effective range and choosing a caliber, I'm going by the military definition of effective range. And the way the Army breaks that down is when the bullet goes transonic, so basically it makes the transition from supersonic to subsonic, that's when the Army cuts off its effective range. Now, and you could,
like around 1,100 feet per second, something like that.
Depends on temperature, but pretty close to that.
Okay.
And what we're looking for is we want to stay within that supersonic range, because when the bullet goes transonic, it can be unpredictable. It can shimmy left, can shimmy right. And that makes it really hard to predict, especially if you got, you know, high value target, and all targets are high value.
Sure. Yeah.
So that's the way we break it down. Now, these calibers are capable of doing more than that. You'll see people at Camp Perry, they shoot, you know, small bore 223s at 1,000 yards. It can be done, but that's not the way that I break it down here. So like 223, 5.56, that's like 550 yards supersonic with most loads. Now, these are generic. Your load might be hotter or you know, cooler than these, but this should get you pretty close, give you an idea what these guns are capable of. 308, 800 meters or 900 yards. 30-06, 900 meters, 990 yards. 300 Win Mag, 1,200 meters, 1,310 yards. 6.5 Creedmoor, really popular right now. 1,300 meters or 1,420 yards. 50 Cal, 1,500 meters or 1,640. And 338 Lapua, you're talking 1,800 meters or 2,000 yards. And keep in mind with those numbers, a mile is 1,600 meters or 1760 yards.
So that'd be, you know, 50 cals just under that, 338, plenty capable at a mile.
Yeah, if you want to shoot a mile, you really need to go, you need to step into a pretty horrendous caliber.
Sure. Thank you for giving us the yardages, by the way. I'm sure that just hurts you to not say meters only.
All military shooters are going to prefer meters. It's just, it all makes sense.
But we're Americans. Come on. Okay, that's useful. And I guess, yeah, very good point about how the military looks at it versus potentially how a precision rifle shooter might look at it versus how a hunter would look at it. Maybe more like the military. You know, like I think about a hunter, if you're shooting elk, I don't know the answer here, but 300 Win Mag is going to have more mass than a 6.5 Creedmoor. So, you know, you got to take in that effect. 6.5 will shoot further and it's still transonic, it sounds like, but you've got more mass on target with a 300 Win Mag.
Yeah, 100%. Now velocity accounts for that, you know, that energy equation. Mm-hmm. So if you can get a, you know, a slightly lighter bullet, say 20 grains lighter, but it's going 500 feet per second faster, that's going to make the difference in energy.
Okay, sure.
But when I tell people, how far do you want to shoot? And most people say, man, I want to shoot at 1,000 yards. Well, you can shoot at 1,000 yards with 223 or 5.56. You're just going to shoot more bullets.
Yeah.
Like you're not going to have the super predictable, you know, one shot, one hit. It's not going to be possible. But if you want to guarantee at 1,000 yards, I can hit my target, 300 Win Mag is a great choice.
Yeah. Or 6.5 Creedmoor, that popular cartridge.
Absolutely. And 6.5 Creedmoor is generally lower cost because they don't cater to the hunting market and there's more availability in 6.5.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's a couple different things you really got to weigh. And if you want a gas gun versus a bolt gun, if you're going to look in the market for a new gun, but yeah, that's how I break it down. Now, if there are some super hot, super new cartridges, 300 PRC, there's options. If you want to get, you know, something that's more capable, it exists. These are just the big ones.
Absolutely. And I feel like 5.56, 223, and then 308 are kind of probably a popular one just because a lot of people probably already have those guns. The ammo is super available and inexpensive for just standard stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want the easiest cost going into this, 5.56, 308 are your go-tos. Next up, 6.5 Creedmoor if you want capability.
Okay.
By far the cheapest.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about MOA versus mil. That's a common thing that'll come up when you're looking at scopes. And probably often misunderstood. So what is the difference here and what do people want to pick?
So traditionally, the argument was, do you want to use imperial measurements or metric measurements? Just like you were saying earlier, I'm an American, I shoot in yards.
Here we go, America.
So MOA would be the obvious choice. And an MOA is actually a more accurate measurement. Mark, can you say that measurement for me?
Yes,
we've tried this three times and I've messed it up twice.
So 1 mil. Is 3.4 MOA.
Perfect.
Nailed it.
So you have a finer adjustment in MOA. Well, that sounds great in theory. The downside is at distance, you're playing with a lot more numbers and finer numbers that are required to make hits. So if you're shooting at like a 10-inch circle at 700 yards, in mils, you would come up, dial up on your scope, 6.3 mils. Where if I wanted to do that same shot with MOA, I would be dialing up to 21.5. I just don't need all those extra numbers in my life. Yep. And especially if I'm going to get a hit with the dope that I have dialed on.
And so when you say dialing up, I guess this is relevant in a couple of areas. So a traditional scope that most people have, like a 3-9 hunting scope, you're going to dial in, sight that gun in, and you're going to set it and forget about it. And you're just going to like hold over, like if you're shooting at a further distance. But on these scopes you're talking about, they have like a set of external knobs that have a whole bunch of adjustments, right?
Yes.
And so you're talking maybe 10 clicks for a mil adjustment, and the equivalent in MOA would be like 30 clicks.
Exactly.
So it's just faster, easier to be mil.
Yep. And it's just smaller numbers. So if you're like, let's say you're shooting 50 cal and you do have to account for spin drift and the wind, and you're shooting on a mountain pass and the wind is really gusting downrange.
Yeah.
It's just easier math to do that calculation with mils than it is with MOA. Now I'm biased. I got a lot of time on mils.
Sure.
But I think you could see that argument across the board.
And it's, what do you think it's like 50-50 people that do mils MOA?
I think most of the industry is moving to mils.
Mils, okay.
And a key reason is that the turret is far less cluttered.
Sure.
It's just a cleaner turret. It's easier to dial it on if you're dialing. Yeah, I'm a mil person till the end.
And the turrets are those adjustment pieces. You have one for up and down, one for left and right that you're moving.
Correct. An elevation and a windage knob. Just like your hunting scope, only they're, instead of being capped and kind of protected, they're exposed so you can make the adjustments.
On the fly. Okay.
Correct.
And then these adjustments you can make with those dials, or your reticle has like dashes on it that you can to hold over as well. Just the long or the short.
Of course. Right? Yeah. So typically if you look at scopes, and I think you're going to ask me a question about first and second focal plane.
That's next. Okay. You beat me to it.
So first and second focal plane would be, if it's first focal plane, the focus knob is behind the power knob. So when you dial up power, you're actually zooming in on the reticle.
Okay.
So the reticle changes size depending on what magnification you're at. That's really important if you want to be at medium power and still have accurate wind calls. Where if you have a second focal plane, the upside to that is your reticle is generally really easy to see.
Yeah, it's full. It's like full screen the whole time.
Full screen the whole time. The downside is none of your adjustments are accurate unless you're at top power.
Yep.
Which is not ideal if you're shooting precision rifle. It is ideal if you're shooting 200 yards and you want to have maximum visibility through your scope of the reticle. Because, like, let's say a 3-18 power scope, when you're at 3 power, the reticle is very fine. I mean, it looks like crossed hairs.
Yeah.
Whereas if you dial up to 18, now it's like looking at a ruler.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest difference. Now, I had a point about, you were talking about BDCs. So if you have a BDC reticle, those are good in some applications, but if you're doing a lot of traveling, so I would steer you away from those because they generally create those at sea level and at 50 degrees. If you go to Colorado and it's -2 and you're at 14,000 feet,
okay,
that is not going to be an accurate drop of that bullet.
Okay, so what I'm going to start doing some long range shooting, and I want to start shooting at 400 or 500 yards. We talked about what cartridge I might pick. Do I pick first or second focal plane?
You go first.
Go first.
Absolutely. Okay.
That way you can use that reticle at, and it's accurate at any zoom level.
Yep. Generally the thing that precision rifle shooters, or I would just say amateur rifle shooters, is finding targets in their scope. That is the most challenging thing I see anytime I have a private instruction, is learning that skill of orienting your gun and then finding that in the terrain. And it's really hard to do that and then dial out or dial up.
Yeah.
To get to where your adjustments are correct. And typically what happens with second focal plane guys is they back the scope out so they can see a lot, have a big field of view in the scope, have it at like 4 power. Well, then they have to dial back up to 10 or 12 power. And at that point they've lost the target and they got to hunt for it. And it just takes so much time.
Yeah. Let alone if you're dialing up to like 25 power or something, then it's,
that's a lot of power.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So for me, as long as you are making adjustments, the only time I would push someone towards second focal plane is if it's a 2-10, something really,
okay,
really low power. And they're not going to be making a lot of precision shots, but they want a really robust and, visible reticle.
Yeah.
That's the only time. And that's typically a law enforcement sniper thing.
Okay. Understood. That hits the scope side of things. So we kind of know what equipment we're looking for. What about, I guess we didn't talk about scope power. What do you need for, if I'm going to be shooting at 500 yards, 1,000 yards, or 1,500 yards, or however you want to break that down, what kind of power do you typically need?
Yeah, so if you talk to the guys from Vietnam, they would say 1 power for every 100 yards. Well, I can tell you from experience, if you're shooting at 1,000 yards and you only have 10 power, that's going to be tough.
Okay.
I would like 2 power for every 100 yards. So at 100 yards, I want to be at 2 power. At 1,000 yards, I want to be at 20 power. I want to see what's going on. That's my general rule of thumb. But man, if you want to, telescope in on something at 500,
sure,
put a 30 power scope on there. But every time you move, any movement is just going to be magnified.
And that's where that sand bag comes in handy.
Definitely. Yeah. If you're shooting from a tripod with 35 power at 500 yards, you're struggling. Yep. That's going to be really rough.
So we did a pretty good walkthrough of everything you need to get started and the considerations to take into account. But let's just kind of take it from the top here. I want to go out and do some shooting. I've got a good gun, an optic. It's mounted well. I've got my ammo. I've shot some maybe at 100 yards, but I want to start reaching out a little bit further. How do I do it, Jared?
So if you're trying to do it on a budget and you don't want to buy a chronograph, you don't want to buy a Kestrel, all you've got is, you know, a decent rifle, some consistent ammunition, and a scope that you can make adjustments on, man, go to the range, print off a generic range card off Sniper's Hide or some other website for your caliber. If you got a 308, man, those are a dime a dozen. You can go anywhere and find a 308 dope card or range card. And go shoot. You know, start at 100, make sure your zero is 100%, and then walk it out. And then if you get lost at 600 or so, look at that, you know, generic range card and see if you're in the right ballpark as far as what you're dialed on your turret. And if you want to make the next step and kind of learn some of those precision rifle skills and tighten up the groups or upgrade your equipment, man, come see an expert, take a class, and
practice makes perfect.
All right, Mark, that covers everything on the sheet. If you listeners have any questions about what we talked about today or are interested in something related to what we talked about today, please shoot us an email.
Yeah, happy to expand on anything we talked about. Like, you know, if you want to hear more about precision rimfire, just shout out with topic suggestions. We're always open to that. Thanks again for listening. Share this episode with anyone that you might know that would be interested in hearing about it. And be back next month. Make sure to listen in.